bringing you everything under the Disney umbrella. Network 1901.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another discussion episode of Lipstick and Lightsabers. So I am one of your hosts, Shannon.
And I'm the other host, Alex.
And today we have a special guest with us, and that is Gina from Unmistakably Star Wars. What's up?
Hi, I'm Gina. Hello, all.
We are really, really excited to have you here today because you know a lot about today's topic, which is Lost Stars by Claudia Gray.
Yeah.
I think we're all really excited to talk about this. Mm-hmm. I think we all really, really like this book.
Yeah.
But before we get into that, we do have a couple of, you know, news items that came out this week. So the first thing is that we got the dates for Star Wars Celebration Anaheim, and Alex and I are ready to go.
Yeah, we already have our hotel.
Yeah, we already bought a hotel.
That is amazing. Yeah.
Are you going to go this year, Gina?
So I'm actually not sure, only because, so I'm in grad school right now. And by the time that rolls around, I will be looking for an adult job. So we are still seeing if I'm going to go.
I know that it's kind of a weird time for people who are in school because it's August 27th through the 31st, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah. Which is
something like that.
I think it's like the weekend of like the first week of school.
Yeah, I was looking for my school because like I'm going to go back eventually and get a teaching license. And I was looking at it. I was like, oh, that's when that starts as well. So we'll see about that. But I know I'm super, super excited. I'm still like post-con depression. So I'm ready for some more Star Wars Celebration. And by the time this episode comes out, we'll have already passed the date to purchase tickets and hotels and all that kind of stuff. But that is coming up. And if anybody is on the fence about going to Star Wars Celebration or if you've always wanted to go, I think all three of us can definitely say that it is an amazing experience. And if you are able to, you definitely should go. But the other thing that we got this week was the comic. So is this the Rise of Resistance
series?
Age of Resistance. Yeah. Yes. And why are we freaking out about this today, ladies?
Because there's a lot of Kylo content.
Yes.
I can't. Somebody else is going to have to talk about this because I can't. I still can't process it.
Okay, so there's 4 comics, and they're going to be single issues. They come out once a week in September. The first one comes out on Shannon's birthday.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's Rose, then Snoke, then Rey, then Kylo, I think.
That would make sense, because you said that Rey comes out on your birthday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Rey comes out on my birthday. And yeah, the Virgos are winning. Yay!
Yeah. Raylos own the month of September because Caitlin from Sky Talkers, her birthday, so hers would be the Snoke one then.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
3 weeks in a row. Anyways, yeah. So the Rose one, I believe, is about Rose and her sister. So it's before The Last Jedi. And then the Snoke one, which is probably the most interesting one to me, is in the first days of training Kylo, when he joins the First Order, which is a timeline we haven't really gotten at all. And I was really not expecting it, like, now, before The Rise of Skywalker. So, what do you guys think?
It's not real.
No, it's not. I wasn't expecting to get this, like, ever or at all, so I'm over the moon right now.
Right? Yeah. And then, I thought maybe, like, years after, they'd be like, all right, now we'll tell you all the secrets.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or at, like, Celebration Anaheim, we were going to get announcements for, like, Ben Solo stuff or whatever. But, yeah, and then the Rey one is a scene between, like, her and Leia before she goes out to find Luke. And then the Kylo one. Wait, what is the Kylo one?
The Kylo one is about Anakin.
Oh.
Interesting. Yeah, it's about Kylo being constantly in Anakin and Vader's shadow and whether or not it will consume him or if he will rise above it. And I'm just like, oh my God.
I'm very, very excited. I don't really consume the comics. Like, I do from the library, but I think I'll be buying all four of these.
I was going to say, as far as lipstick and lightsabers go, you are the comic reader.
Yeah. But I don't buy comics. I take them out from the library. But these ones I think I will buy. I'm excited.
I think these will be the first comics I read from Star Wars because I've never read any of them.
Yeah, honestly, same. I haven't read any of them either. And I'm just like, I really want all of this. Oh, and plus Kylo looks so princely on
his cover.
He looks
really good. They all look really good. Well, I mean, Snoke's gross, but the covers are very well made. But
he's got a force tree behind him. What is that? Mm-hmm. Like, what? I don't understand. But anyway, so yeah, we're super excited about everything. And plus, if you don't read the comics, you know, like Alex said, she takes those out from the library. So there are definitely ways to get into it. And I know that a lot of times people will upload those to the internet. And I often see them rolling around on Twitter. So those will definitely be available at some point. But I'm definitely interested in trying to get into the comics just for that. So... But I think with that, we're going to go ahead and roll into our discussion all about Lost Stars. So we will start off with a general summary, which I'm going to read off of the back of the book because I'm a professional podcaster. So it says, the reign of the Galactic Empire has reached the outer rim planet of Jellucan, where aristocratic Thane Kyrell and rural villager Sayana Ree bond over their love of flying. Enrolling at the Imperial Academy is nothing less than a dream come true for both of them. But Thane sours on the dream when he sees firsthand the horrific tactics the Empire uses to maintain its ironclad rule. Bitter and disillusioned, he joins the fledgling rebellion, putting Sayana in an unbearable position between her loyalty to the Empire and her love for the man she's known since childhood. Now on opposite sides of the war, will these friends turned foes ever find a way to be together, or will duty tear them and the galaxy apart?
Wow, that's dramatic. Oh,
it's so good. It's so dramatic. All right, so let's start with Gina. Give us your general thoughts. Try to keep it spoilerish free if you can about Lost Stars.
It's everything you want if you like Star Wars angst and love. So that makes it perfect.
100%. What about you, Alex?
I think this was the second Star Wars book I had ever read. I think I read Princess of Alderaan first. So this was my second Claudia book also. And it sweeps you away into this like really involved story. And it really allows you to enjoy like events of the original trilogy from like a different point of view and a different perspective. And I think it brings a lot to both newer fans and older fans.
Yeah, definitely. I remember I tried to read Bloodline before like I did anything, and I couldn't muscle my way through it because I was still such a new fan. But then somebody recommended Lost Stars to me, and I listened to it on audiobook, and just it starts off when Sayana and Thane are like what, 8-9 years old, and it goes all the way through the entire events of the original trilogy, all the way to the Battle of Jakku. And you get to spend so much time with them, and you get to see these events that we all had already known from these films from such a different perspective. And that was exactly what I was wanting, because I had such a love-hate relationship with the original trilogy. And I feel like this book really helped me, like, get past some of that. And like Claudia Gray just did a fantastic job of ripping my heart out of my chest and putting it in a blender and then just shoving it back in my body. And I thank her for it. Yeah. When I reread this book, I had to read the ending at work, which always happens to me. I always have to read the most emotional parts of every single book when I'm at work. And I'm like, you can't cry. You're sitting here in the gallery. You're supposed to be telling people not to touch things. You can't be sitting here crying. I definitely wish that we could get some more books like this. And I'm really, really hoping for a Lost Stars 2, because the way that this book leaves off really makes you want a lot more from Sayana and Thane.
Mm-hmm. And we're getting Crash of Fate in about, what, a month and a half?
Yes.
soon.
And that sounds like it's a similar type of story. I'm sure it'll be different, but Sounds good.
I mean, the second that Zoraida said kissing in space, I was like, okay, I'm here for it. I'm here for that. But yeah, if you haven't read Lost Stars, all three of us highly, highly recommend that you do. I think that for a lot of people, it is a great entry point into Star Wars books because it, since it leans on the original trilogy, you really don't have to know a whole lot of like outside stuff. It's not trying to connect dots or anything. It's just showing it to you from another perspective. And Claudia Gray just does such an amazing job of showcasing these characters all throughout their lives, and you really, really feel attached to them. And I think that that's, it's got like all of the themes that Star Wars loves, yeah, like family and hope and love. It's just, it's so good.
And Claudia does like the soulmate trope really, really great too. And there, and she sprinkles a little bit of that in this book too.
Yes. Yes. Well, before we get into some more spoilery stuff, because we are going to break down this book and go through it all the way through, there is a graphic novel version of this as well. And I think volume 2 is getting ready to come out soon. I saw the cover floating around. I have read the graphic novel. It's not all of it. It only goes to, I think it goes through the Battle of Hoth. It goes through almost halfway through the book. And I personally did not enjoy it as much as Lost Stars. If anything, it actually made me really angry. And that's just because we don't get to spend any time with the characters. So it makes Sienna look really bad. Because, you know, Sienna stays with the Empire for a long time. And it makes her look really, really bad. And it's just, it's not as emotional and you don't feel as connected. So I just didn't connect with it that personally. But the art is really beautiful. So I think it's definitely something where, like, if you see it around, it's definitely good to flip through. I like having it. But it's definitely can never be a substitute for actually reading the book.
It's a good, like, addition to the book.
Yeah, yeah. I think, like, if you tried to read just the graphic novel and not the book at all, it'd be like, it's literally the tip of the iceberg. Like, it's nothing. There's nothing to it.
I could see it being like, as, and this is as someone who's never read the graphic novel, but as like, if you aren't someone who really likes reading books, like a good way to be like, okay, I want to know more about these characters. I want to know more about the story. And then you transition from the graphic novel to the book. I could see that.
Yeah,
that is a really, that's a really good way of putting it. Cause like, I see that with like movies too. Mm-hmm. Cause like, I hate the Percy Jackson movies, but I saw the movie first and it made me read the books. And now I have a channel called Still Waiting for My Seder. So, you know, there is something to be said for like, it's not what you maybe want it to be, but it's still going to get people who might not read it anyway to finally get into it. All right. Well, now is the part of the show where if you haven't read this book and you want to avoid spoilers, you probably want to go ahead and stop listening. But you want to come back if you read the book, because we're going to break down this book all the way. And we're going to start off with Sienna and Thane's early life and their time at the Academy. So, Regina, would you like to tell us how Sienna and Thane kind of come together early on in the book?
Yeah. So the Empire comes to their home world. How did you say it? You say it different than I did.
Jellucan.
Jellucan. Okay, yeah. That's great.
I listened to the audiobook like 3 times.
honestly, I have only ever listened to like 1 audiobook in my life. So I take all your pronunciations. Please tell me if I mispronounce things wrong.
You just gotta say it confidently.
So I know the Empire comes and they're both super excited. We know that Thane is from like this higher class of people and Sienna's from like this lower class, this group of people who came to the planet first. But anyway, they're there for this big celebration because of the Empire. And they're both excited, walking with their families, identifying the different shuttles, like the Lambda class shuttle. But the first time I think they actually come together to meet is when Thane comes to Sienna's defense, when he notices a couple of boys are harassing her and she's by herself going to take on these boys fighting, and he jumps in to her defense. So that's like the very first time we get them together.
Mm-hmm. I like that Thane when he sees Sienna. So, like, the first waiver and second waiver thing is very Romeo and Juliet. Mm-hmm. I think, like, you know, Thane comes from kind of, like, the snooty upper class, and Sienna's, like, her first waiver people are very proud, and they're workers, and, like, all that kind of stuff. And most people, when they see first waivers, just think, like, oh, you know, she just works on a farm, she came here on an animal, whatever. But when Thane sees Sienna, and they're, like, 8 years old, his first thought is that she looks like a fallen autumn leaf. And it's so precious. Oh, my God. I'm just like, Thane, you sweet boy. Yeah, so they really come together, and they just want to fly, like, the big ships, and they want to go to the Imperial Academy, and they encounter Grand Moff Tarkin, and this is where we really see that, like, the Empire starts them young. They want to get their hooks in as quickly as they can. They want to go out to worlds where maybe they, like, won't see right away, like, kind of how the Empire deals with things, and, like, Sienna and Thane are completely, like, awestruck by the Empire, and they're like, this is what I want to do, this is what I believe in, and it's kind of scary to see.
Yeah, when I first read this book, knowing who Grand Moff Tarkin and everyone is, I was just shocked by the audacity of it all to, like, be with kids who obviously don't know any better. But it took a couple of read-throughs for me to be like, oh wow, they groomed them young. This is, like, that serious. Because I was just like, oh, he's just come. They're going to talk about ships. It's cute. And then and then it hit me at one moment. And I was like, that's some serious tactics right there.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting to look at it this way, because the Empire hasn't really done anything yet. Like, they've been the Empire for, like, what, 8 years? But to a lot of these planets, especially if you're on the Outer Rim, and especially to kids that are this young who, like, have never lived in another type of world, like, they, like, this is before, like, we really see the Empire as, like, the big, bad, evil Empire that we know it as by the time we get to A New Hope. Mm-hmm. And I think being able to see that mindset and that mentality really gets you ready for, like, how this book is going to challenge your point of view and to really, really make you think.
And, I mean, we've been getting kind of different points of view of this time, especially with Rogue One, and with Jin is kind of like, you know, it's not going to affect me if I don't look up. So you get that middle view, and then in this book you get both sides, and it's like, It's so interesting that they're showing us that now, and they never really were back when it was just the original trilogy and just the prequel trilogy. And now they are, because I feel like it's a really main theme of the sequel trilogy. So it's like they're trying to get that, our, like, little gears going, thinking about it in a different way.
I think what we see too is, like, they really manipulate Sienna in particular, because, like, her people are very proud and they're very loyal. So Sienna is, like, an extremely loyal person, and the Empire gets their hooks in her. And this is something that we'll see Thane think about as the book goes on, and that she, like, the Empire doesn't deserve her loyalty. And they really, truly manipulate her. And you see that a little bit later. So Sienna and Thane, you know, they grow up, they become best friends, they go to the same Imperial Academy. But then they're faced with this assignment where they have to build this cannon out of a blaster. And the Empire literally pits them against each other. And they do this on purpose to try to, like, you know, they're from the same planet, they shouldn't be so good of friends anymore. And they do this to try to break them up. And not only does it work, but it works almost too well.
Yeah, like, I forget which character mentions, I think it was maybe Nash or someone saying that,
it's,
you know,
it's Ved, Ved Foslow.
Yeah, Ved even says, like, you know, like, you guys were supposed to have, like, a small, like, argument over it. You weren't supposed to stop being friends. Like, stop talking, I mean.
Yeah, it says it on page 135. It's like, they set you up. They set you up so that you'd hate each other, and you swallowed the bait. Like, it's just, like, in Thane, realizes this. So, like, as it's happening, you know, like, one of their, I think it's Thane's cannon doesn't work, and then it looks like it was actually Sienna who sabotaged him, but then it was actually, no, she was framed by none other than Thane himself, and none of it makes any sense. And when they dig a little bit deeper, it does become clear to Thane that it was the Academy who did this to them. It was, like, what is it? The Office of Student Outcomes did this on purpose. And what kind of breaks them apart in this moment is that Sienna is very much like, they would never do that. Why would they do that to us? Like, these are our authority figures. They would never do anything to harm us. And Thane thinks that she's very naive for thinking this way, and their argument gets really, really ugly.
Mm-hmm. She puts so much trust in them.
It's so sad.
They don't deserve it.
No, they don't deserve it. I just, like that, and this happens so early, because it's in chapter 6, which it always shocks me how early this happens. And, like, Sienna and Thane stopped talking to each other for, like, what, 2 years?
Yeah,
before they finally reconcile. And it's because, like, they are so close. Before this part, like, we see that they are almost like one person. Like, when they fly together, they know how each other moves. They know how they think. And since they are so close, I think that is why they fell so hard, because Thane knows exactly where to dig at Sienna, and Sienna knows exactly where to dig at Thane, and it's explosive. And I think this is a relationship, knowing that this came out before The Force Awakens, that we're seeing evolve right now. I do also want to point out that when they reconcile, it's at a ball, and Claudia Gray.
Well, you know how I feel about balls in Star Wars.
Oh, yes. There's no braiding, though.
No braiding.
Yeah. Alex loves the Alderaan braids.
That's, like, my favorite thing to read about in fan fiction. It's my favorite thing. I, like, throw my phone whenever I come across it. It's so good.
But you did recently.
Yeah. It doesn't matter, like, what the ship is, like, whoever, if there's braiding, I'm freaking out.
I'm gonna admit, I never paid much attention to it, like, even when it's mentioned in this book, until I was reading something, and someone was just like, what if, like, Rey or someone braided Ben Solo's hair? And after that, I was just like, I'm interested in everything about this. What is happening?
Yeah, and like, we're all begging for a braiding, like, guide from Lucasfilm. Even Sarah said she would write it for them.
Well, like, here's the thing. You don't throw out a detail like, you know, how on Alderaan, unbraiding somebody's hair is one of the most intimate things that you can do. You don't just throw that out there and then have Ben frickin' Solo being a prince of Alderaan. I'm sorry.
And he knows how to braid. We were reading this fic recently where it's even mentioned, like, his mom, like, taught him, like, all the, like, customs of braiding, and I just lost.
Oh, Lord. But that's our Raylo tangent. I'm sure we'll circle back around to it later. But do either of you have anything you want to add before we move on to the destruction of the Death Star in Alderaan?
I was just going to say, one of the things that I find most interesting about this. So I've said this in a couple of different podcasts, and I talk about it all the time. But the reason I got back into Star Wars is because I wanted to know who Kylo Ren was. And so my immediate fascination was always with the First Order. And then when I watched the original 6 movies, it was with the Empire. So I've always been kind of like a dark side person, like kind of sort of with the bad guys. And so this being the first Star Wars book I ever read, that was one of the things I appreciated in getting the different point of views, because I was always so much like, I feel kind of bad that I like the bad guys, but I still really like the bad guys. Even though I know they don't do the greatest things. And so, and we'll probably get to it later in the podcast, but, like, seeing that, like, no one's ever really completely right and no one's ever really completely wrong, I really appreciated that as, like, someone who is a new fan reading this book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100. That was something that, like, I was frustrated about in the original trilogy. It's just like, oh, the rebels are good guys because they're the good guys, and the Empire's bad because they're bad. Like, and that's something that I don't like. I like that gray area. And because you spend so much time with Thane and Sienna, and because they grow up in the Empire, like, seeing Sienna's journey breaks my heart. It is so emotional. And, like, yeah, we'll talk about that when we get to the end of the book, but it's just, I love Sienna so much, and I can only imagine, like, what it means to have this character in Star Wars. It's just, it's so amazing. But, so moving on a little bit into the book, we have, you know, Sienna and Thane graduate top of their class. They're assigned to their different stations within the Empire. Sienna is on the command track, and Thane is going to be flying TIE fighters. And we get to the point where Alderaan is destroyed. And then a little bit later on, the Death Star is destroyed. And what I loved about this was that we have friends on the Death Star by this point. Jude Edovan is somebody that is introduced during the Academy. She is one of Sienna's roommates. She was one of my favorite characters up until this point. Yeah. So, like, when the Death Star blows up, like, you're like, oh, shoot. Like, I knew people on the Death Star. Like, wait a second. So, like, it forces you to look at it from a different perspective. It forces you to be like, okay, so the rebels, you can see it as they are terrorists. If you're 100% in the Empire, like, this is a terrorist act. But how do you reconcile that with the Empire blowing up an entire planet?
And it's interesting because I think you see it through Nash. Like, Alderaan, like, Alderaan blowing up, seeing it through Nash's point of view versus Leia's is so interesting because Nash kind of just shuts down. And he's like, you know, like, I can't have feelings, like, about this. I just can't. So he just, I guess, puts all his feelings in a box and just locks it away and never opens it. And it's like,
and it blows up in his face.
I almost felt more emotion reading it in this book than watching A New Hope. And I get that you can't, like, go so, you only have so much to tell in a movie because it's, like, this time limit. But, like, Leia's reaction versus Nash's reaction, I felt more for Nash in that moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because this is, you know, Nash's homeworld. And you're also seeing it, so not only do you get to see Nash's reaction as it's happening, because he's with Sienna, I believe, like, he's watching this happen, and, like, she reflects that, like, he can't really let it show, because then the Empire is going to think that that's treason and go after him, too. And you also see it, like, from Thane's perspective, because Nash was one of Thane's roommates, and he's remembering all of the times that Nash was like, oh, I'm going to take you to Alderaan, we're going to see the sights, and, like, all of a sudden, he's like, that is never going to happen. Like, this whole entire planet is just gone. And I agree. I had never really felt anything about it before either. And I think if you read Leia, Princess of Alderaan, obviously you're going to get really attached to that planet because you spend so much time on there. But, like, just simply seeing it from Nash's perspective, all of a sudden, like, you feel that attachment to it. Like, you have that attachment to Alderaan. Seeing the destruction of the Death Star from Sienna's perspective, knowing that her best friend just, like, not her best friend, because that's Thane, but one of her best friends just died. Like, you are suddenly full of all of these emotions, and you don't really know what to do with either of it. And I think that that's a dilemma that both of, like, our characters are faced with, and they both make decisions that will have lasting impacts for the rest of the book.
I like this quote that you wrote down on page 169. It's Thane's thoughts. We killed billions of people. We slaughtered billions. And afterward, we were expected to applaud.
Claudia. Claudia. It's so, but he's right. Like, they were expected to applaud when Alderaan blew up. They were expected to be like, look what we have just done. And they frame it as, and this is how Sienna is able to process it, as they were trying, in quotations, to stop a war before it ever even began. And so that is what Sienna takes from this whole situation. It said, like, it was a horrible, horrible thing to happen, but it was the Empire trying to prevent a war from happening. And unfortunately, it didn't work, and the Rebellion retaliated. And then she's angry, and she blames the Rebellion because Jude died. And we see that Thane recognizes this for what it is, and it's that the Empire just doesn't care, and the Empire has a huge disregard for life. And this is when he's already started to become disillusioned, but this is when it really, really starts to kind of hit him. What do you guys think of the huge miscommunication that happens here between Sienna and Thane?
So the whole miscommunication thing, kind of, Thane and Sienna have been out of communication for a long time because they were, like, not friends for 2 years. And I don't know if that affected them not really hearing each other out, but they both took their sentences and went completely opposite directions with them and were like, oh, like, obviously Sienna was saying this when she said this, and Thane is like, oh, like, obviously we're leaving, and then he leaves and is like, well, I guess she didn't come.
Well, I'm on the same page. And obviously, they hadn't been talking for a while. They're a bit out of sync. They have to get back together in sync and together physically, I guess. But I just think back to how you compartmentalize things differently and process through things mm-hmm. differently, which is why I really appreciate Claudia giving us these thoughts of Alderaan blowing up, of how Sienna feels about the Empire, how Thane is starting to feel about the Empire. Because I think it challenges you as a reader, how you're feeling about the Rebels and the Empire. And it sort of almost makes you, like, pick a side yourself. Like, what would you do if you were in that situation? And so the miscommunication they're having, you're almost having, because you're like, no, this makes sense. Why would you think this way, or things like that? And so I feel like the way Claudia writes it, it puts sort of you in the story yourself, trying to figure it out. And so it's completely understandable that they are not on the same page.
Well, and, like, I remember the first time I read this, like, in the context of the book, Sienna, I don't really want to say that she's right, but from the point of view that we've been seeing it, like, Sienna's way kind of seems like the way that you should be thinking. And Thane has this huge problem with authority because he has a really horrible relationship with his father. He definitely doesn't trust easily. He's a very cynical, selfish type of person. And so to see him kind of see this and then just, like, to know that he's already disillusioned and decide to leave, you're kind of like, oh, well, Thane, like, what are you doing? Like, Sienna is still here. But then when you get to see him kind of grow and you see him kind of figure out, like, it's not so much that I just don't want to be part of this, it's so much that I have to do something about it. Yeah. That's when you start to root for Thane, I think.
It's similar to Finn, actually, where you see that growth in Finn, where at first it's just, I want to get away, and then it turns into, no, I need to do something about this.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it calls you to, because I think this is very much like, you can compare this to, like, real life if you want to, and it's like, you can be angry and upset with things that are happening, but if you're not really willing to do anything about it, then you're kind of just making a lot of noise.
Yeah.
And with Thane, like, the first time I read this book, I was like, he's crazy. How is he thinking that Sienna is on the same page with him? Sienna would never leave the Empire, blah, blah, blah. But, like, as he grows and you finally realize that, like, he is starting to, like, care about other people and more than just him and Sienna, like, you really get to see that growth in him. And then suddenly you're like, okay, it is Sienna who's missing something here. And that will eventually be kind of her undoing.
But I also kind of understand, like, Sienna's, like, side of it is that Thane is going to be hunted now, right? He's wanted by the Empire. He's on the run. He's by himself. So I see both sides.
So when Thane decides to leave the Empire, like, it doesn't just, it doesn't just exactly, like, happen. It's not like, you know, all of the stuff blows up and then he leaves the Empire. And I have this quote flagged, but I didn't write the whole thing. Yes. So it actually happens after he's on, like a mission for the Empire, basically just like making people afraid of the Empire flying his TIE fighter. And he suddenly realizes, and this is on page 210, it says, "This was how evil magnified itself. It took root in the young and grew along with them. Each generation provided the next level of abuse. We're teaching children to approve of slavery. We're teaching them cruelty is a virtue." But the worst part was, Thane had been that kid. Like, this is when he sees that the Empire is more than just, like, negligent and, you know, like, kind of disregarding people's lives. But, like, the Empire is something that is evil and something that is inspiring more evil and brutality in others, and that it's just magnifying. And I can't help but notice that, like, that's a theme that we see a lot throughout Star Wars. That's something that I think we see in Anakin. That's something that I think we see in Ben Solo. And to see Thane recognize this and be like, I can't be a part of this anymore, I have to walk away, I think took a lot of guts from him.
I think I also really appreciate it because if you think about it, he's from this one planet and he's only known the Empire in this one way as these almost like savior type people. So of course you're going to think about him in a good way. And so I recognize that like sometimes you need to see that like outside thing in order to spur you into doing something else. And so I just really appreciate like the evolution of when he leaves the Empire. It's not just like, oh, they killed a bunch of people, which is terrible, but they killed a bunch of people, they're automatically terrible, they're automatically wrong, I'm just going to defect. It like, it's a process because it's years of unlearning. And I appreciate mm-hmm. seeing that journey.
Well, and he also recognizes, he's like, yeah, the Empire killed a whole lot of people and I hate it and I can't be with it anymore. But he doesn't immediately join the Rebellion either because right. the Rebellion just killed a whole bunch of people. You know, he's like, they're terrorists, I'm not going to join up with them. He eventually does. But it's, you know, that's kind of where he's at that point. And when him and Sienna are kind of faced with this, and Sienna is faced with like Thane is actually leaving the Empire and that like she can't leave, it tears her apart because she's forced to decide between her loyalty to the Empire and her loyalty to Thane. And she ultimately, even though she stays with the Empire, she chooses Thane. She chooses to protect him. And it literally, like, through the next couple of years of her life, like, she really changes. It really yeah. messes her up to have to live with that.
It shifts her views on the Empire for sure. She starts mm-hmm. to see those like little cracks.
Yeah, it's like if it can touch somebody like Thane, then surely there must mm-hmm. be something more to this that she hadn't been seeing, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where we get that amazing line right before the fade to black, which, by the way, Claudia Gray has not one, but two fade to blacks in this book, where Sienna is talking about how sometimes we're loyal to more than one thing, and tonight she chooses Thane, and I'm just like, Claudia, please write everything forever and ever. Oh, I love it so much. I want to talk a little bit about how Thane finally decides to join the Rebellion, because it does take him a while to get there. And when I was reading this book, I was kind of noticing that he goes from being selfish to it being all about him and all about Sienna to finally seeing like the brutality that's being done to the galaxy and all of the horrible things that the Empire is doing to all of these people, and finally realizing that like he can't stand by and let that happen. Like, he finally allows himself to be like, I care about what's being done to the galaxy, and if I need to do something about it, then the Rebellion is the way to go.
And there's, like, there's that really nice conversation between him and Logera where he's saying, you know, like, I'm ready to join this fight, and Logera says, well, you know, the crew isn't ready. Like, the crew that he works with on the mm-hmm. ship isn't ready. And But eventually you see that, like, go through at the end, but it's nice that relationship he has with Logera, and Logera to say, like, yeah, like, go do this.
Well, it was a really difficult decision, which I really appreciate. Like we've been saying, you know, it's not just Empire is evil and Rebellion is good. Like, this was a really hard decision for Thane to make, because he's like, these people are terrorists. These people killed my friends. These people blew up the Death Star. And when he's asked to join, like, he really doesn't know what he wants. And he's like, I don't believe in your rebellion. I don't believe that suddenly everything's going to be better if you guys win. And he says it on page 209 that he joins not because he believes in the rebellion, but he believes that the Empire is pure evil, which is really interesting. And that, I think that's something that they've been exploring a lot more in new canon, especially if you've read the book Inferno Squad, that really goes into that because you see that dark side of the rebellion.
You see the radical side, It's a really, and, really great book.
Yeah, oh, it's a big pain train. Ooh, ow, you think Lost Stars hurts. And I'm only like 50 pages into Alphabet Squadron, but it's kind of doing that same thing where it's at a point in time where, like, the rebellion won, but the galaxy is not in a good place. If anything, it's a lot worse. It took a long time for it to get better. And I like that Disney has been exploring that with the new canon.
Yeah, there's these lines. One's on page 278 and the other's on 279. And Thane says, the Empire wrecks worlds and enslaves entire species and doesn't give a damn about anyone under its rule. And then later he says, I can't say that whoever gets power next will be any better, but it can't get any worse. That's not possible. And I like how there's this whole thought process of like, well, all I know is I have to fight this fight right now and I'm with the best people possible to do it. I can't tell you a single thing about what comes next. Obviously, there's going to be some kind of power vacuum. I get that, you know, our side doesn't do the greatest things, but like, there's this focus of, but I know that this is wrong and I have to confront what is wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, and to put this against Sienna, because Thane is very much like, this is what I believe to be right and I have to stand with it. And at this point, Sienna has started to see the cracks. Like, this is kind of the beginning of Sienna's undoing after Thane leaves the Empire, because she's slowly coming to realize that this isn't the Empire that she always thought it was. But she still continues to stand with it, even though that she knows that it's wrong. And we'll talk about this a little bit more later, but it brings up this huge idea of the theme of, like, loyalty and duty, because Sienna is such a loyal person. She's so loyal to the Empire that she won't even leave, even when she knows that it's wrong. And it tears her apart. It literally starts to eat her alive. I think one of the biggest things that Sienna starts to notice is that the Empire just wastes lives. Like, it doesn't care at all.
They're a machine.
It's exactly. It's a machine. And it even says on page 308 that they protect people by forgetting they were people. And it was the only element of her command track training that had ever given her pause, because they frame it as, oh, well, to protect all of these people, we kind of have to, like, you know, let some of these people die. And, like, as she kind of starts to live with it and see it more, she's like, none of these people had to die. Like, we didn't have to send these TIE fighters into this asteroid field because we knew that we weren't going to catch the Millennium Falcon. Like, they all just died for no reason. And that really starts to kind of weigh on her. And she finally starts to doubt it for real when her mother is accused of embezzling funds back on her home planet. And everybody's like, oh, well, you know that they're going to come to the right conclusion, meaning that, you know, her mother's going to go to prison. And she believes 100% that it's a mistake and that her mother's going to walk free. And that is just not how it turns out for her.
That whole, like, kind of section of the book is so heartbreaking, because when she comes back to the Empire, she knows she can't say anything. When she's asked about it, like, you know, like, yeah, they chose rightly, right? Of course, that's not true. But for her to stay in the Empire and move up the ranks, but she doesn't really care about that anymore, about moving up the ranks. But that's what they told her, you know, you're up for a promotion soon. And, like, all these things. And she stays silent.
And I think, you know, I love the whole section where she returns to Jellucan, because we get to see her childhood home. We get to see her father. And we'd been to Jellucan one other time, and that was when when Thane left the Empire. So it's been a couple of years now. And the planet has changed so much, because when the Empire comes to a planet, especially a planet that is rich in minerals, it mines, and that completely destroys the planet. Yeah. So this once beautiful planet that she grew up on is just covered in mineral dust and smog, and the people are so beaten down. And she suddenly is just like, how can this possibly be happening? And even her father... Her father is so proud and so loyal, and he talks about how, you know, you can't, like, say these things about the Empire. We have to still stand with the Empire, to the point when his wife is being taken away. He's like, he says it too, that the right decision was made. She's like, how can you possibly say that right now? And he's like, we have to. Like, yeah. We have no other choice.
He's, I'm sure in the inside, he's just like Sienna and is...
Yeah.
I know there's even this line he says on page 363 where it says, the Empire accuses her. We owe our allegiance to the Empire. To stand against it would be the most base dishonor. And she's just like completely shocked at all that mm-hmm. he would do anything against her mother.
Yeah. Well, and that comes back around later on page 400 when she says that she grew up believing in that like so devoutly. And now those words sounded hollow. Mm-hmm. Like, that suddenly, like, all Sienna is, like, if you were to pick one word to describe Sienna, I think it would be loyal. And so to have her loyalty tested like this, to have to choose between the people that she loves and this empire that she truly, truly believed in, like, it destroys her. And it breaks my heart, because she talks to Thane again, because Thane comes back and he's the only person who stands with her family at all. And she still tells him, like, I still can't leave. I still have to stay. I still believe that as long as there is one good person in the Empire, like, don't we want that? Like, don't we want there to be good people in the Empire? And she's, like, grasping at straws, trying to make sure that her life wasn't meaningless, to make sure that she wasn't putting her stake in it for no reason at all. Oof. It's so much. It's so heavy.
And it just breaks my heart. I really cannot imagine putting so much faith and stock into something for, like, literally years of my life and so long, and then having it do you completely wrong. I cannot mm-hmm. imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But even, you see it a bit, it's that book, Before the Awakening, with Finn.
Yeah.
Finn's mm-hmm. story in Before the Awakening, it kind of, like, reminds me of that, too. Like, where he still had some belief in it, because they were so brainwashed.
I think you even see that in Phasma with Cardinal, mm-hmm. because Cardinal really loves his job. Like, Cardinal is, he's kind of like the Phasma, but for the young recruits. And he loves his job. He loves training these new, you know, stormtroopers. But he knows that, like, Phasma is no good, and he wants to prove that she's not in it for the right reasons. And suddenly he realizes that, like, people like Phasma are what the First Order wants, not people like Cardinal. And that's really hard for him to come to terms with, too. And, like, that's why he leaves. Spoiler for Phasma. but, like, tears him apart too, because he's like, what am I doing? What if I just devoted my life to this cause to find out that, like, it was for nothing and that it wasn't what I thought it mm-hmm. was supposed to be? And I love that Disney is allowing us to see this, that Star Wars is exploring this, because it is so nuanced mm-hmm. and it's so gray, and it really forces you to, like, take a step back and look at something from a different point of view. And that's what I love about any mm-hmm. kind of storytelling, when it forces that empathy out of you. Like, it's so good.
I think a lot of the stories, though, are setting it up for Ben's redemption.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something that Alex and I always look towards.
we see with Sienna, we don't see the end of her story, really. And the same with Cardinal, but maybe we will. This August, maybe, to see what happens to him. But Finn is really, like, can you think of any other characters that have left the First Order that you've seen them through it a little bit into the other side?
Not the First Order, but maybe Callus from Rebels?
Yeah.
It's just so good.
Yeah.
I think we get another death blow I think the final death blow for Sienna is when she sees the second Death Star. And I do want to read, so she sees it, it's chapter 24, like she's really like internalizing and thinking about it. But it says, whenever Sienna had a nightmare about Alderaan, she scored away her doubts by remembering Jude. Her friend's loss had always helped Sienna balance the scales in her mind, to recall that massive death and destruction had been caused by both sides in the conflict. She never would have wanted this done in her name. Never. Talking about Jude. And then it skips down a little bit and it says, but no matter how hard Sienna tried, she could never get warm again. The irony was that she did have a broken heart, just not for the reasons that they believed. Like, this breaks her heart, seeing that this empire could create another Death Star, because for years and years and years, she's been telling herself that it was just to stop the war before it began. The empire saw that it didn't work, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then to see that they built this again, like, she can't even process it. She's completely shocked. Yeah, she's completely shocked.
And that's the last straw for her, really. Mm-hmm. And then that's when she gets hurt, right? And she has the which I forget which body part she got taken out.
Her liver.
Her liver, yeah. So like So after that, when she's recovering, she's like, you know what, this is really good because they can put me in something I'll actually make a difference to people. And she starts, like, her job is to call the families of the deceased people from that battle. And so she finally feels like she has something meaningful to do. But then when she's brought back later for the Battle of Jakku, it's like, that's not what she wanted. Even though she got promoted, something that she's always wanted since she was young, it's definitely not what she wants then.
Mm-hmm. Well, she almost realizes, too, like, all the mad scrambling and all of these power grabs. Like, you know, she saw Vader and she saw the Emperor and she saw how much fear they radiate. And, like, these weren't the people that they should be following. And she really comes to terms with that and is faced with it. And she never comes back from it. From that point on, she's like, I can't like fight for them anymore. But she's in it too deep that she can't get out. She doesn't see any way out at this point.
And there's this other moment where she's talking about how, like, the law is harsh, but, like, rule by law is where it goes. And it goes to what you were saying on page 444, where she's saying, but this is ruled by fear and it's ruled by tyranny. And that's, like, absolutely terrible. And I think the other shift in her thinking comes in that she knows Thane is with the rebels, and she knows more about the rebels now with this second Death Star than she did with the first one. And so, like, naivete of, like, thinking that they're just going to stop because there's this giant weapon that can destroy a planet, like, that's completely gone. That, like, one string of hope that maybe it's terrible all these people died, but at least it'll stop the whole war, like, that string of hope is gone because she knows that they won't stop no matter what. And so, like, there's another shift in perspective there too.
Yeah, well, and she sees that, too, like, over the Battle of Endor, because she is fighting in a TIE fighter. Like, that's how she gets injured, because her TIE fighter gets, like, super, super damaged when the second Death Star blows up. And she knows immediately going into this battle that it's useless, and that, because it looks like the Empire's going to win, because they've amassed, like, all of their forces, their entire fleet. Like, they vastly outnumber the Rebellion, and she's like, all of these people are going to die for no reason. If the Death Star is functional, why aren't we just taking out their ships? Blah, 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 blah. And then the Death Star blows up anyway. And she just can't believe it, that the Empire could be so foolish into, like, letting this happen. And she's like, all of these people died for literally no reason. And then she, you know, she wakes up 10 months later with her liver, you know, being regrown. And it's just, like, she can't do it anymore. She can't do this anymore. And it's so good that she has to recover for a long time so that she's not in combat. She's not faced with all of that anymore. But I think that really forces her to sit with her emotions. And that's how she gets to this point in the Battle of Jakku, when she finally sees a way out. And that is the only way to go out with honor. It's the only way to go out with loyalty. And that is to die with her ship. Yeah. Yeah. Pain train. And it was foreshadowed, too, because they talk about it at the very beginning of the book. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, what do you do if you get boarded? And Sienna's like, you know, if nothing else can happen, the captain has to go down with the ship. And that is exactly what happens. And she sees it as a way out. She sees this as her solution. And Thane is one of the people that boards this ship, and he's trying to save her. And she is telling him, like, let me die. Let me do this. And, like, I don't know if, and she doesn't know either, if she regrets him saving her, like, regrets living. And that's something that we won't know until we get another installment of Lost Stars, because of the way this book ends.
It's such a, like, hard ending to read.
Yeah, imagine reading it at work. Yeah. but what do you guys think about Sienna's journey, like, getting to this point? Like, what are your thoughts here?
So this is a hard ending for me to read, even rereading it, because I'm someone who, unless I know there's another book, I like a happy little neat bow at the end. Like, oh, we can yes. have as much conflict in the middle, but just give me my happy ending. And that's not exactly what we got here. And I think about, I want another book, but I think about what I would want to happen. And I honestly go back and forth. Sometimes I wish that Thane had let, like, Sienna have the out that she wanted, just because I know that, like, loyalty being a defining part of her personality and who she is, like, there's this ending she sees. But when they talk, I can't help but think, okay, but people change, people evolve. She can eventually have her happy ending. But that's something I, like, always go back and forth yeah. about. I never feel like I feel completely okay with anything that happened at the end of this book.
Well, and we were saying earlier that Sienna's loyalty to Thane was stronger than to the Empire earlier in the book. So I'd like to think that eventually she would forgive him for it and mm-hmm. realize that, you know, like, I loved him more than I love the Empire.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and I think she will forgive him, too, because, I mean, she relents and lets him visit her, you know, within, like, the first week of her being in captivity. And it's going to take her a long time, and there's so much programming that she's kind of have to break down. But I do think, ultimately, like, she started to really hate the Empire, mm-hmm. and I think that, you know, Thane is probably the only person in the entire galaxy who can understand, like, what she is going through. And so to have him there with her to help shoulder that is extremely important. Like, she has to come back from everything. Like, there's, like, a line where she said that she was so loyal to the Empire to that she became a war criminal. Like, and that's just not Sienna at all. Like, that's not what you would think of when you think of Sienna. But it happened, and now she has to come back from that. And I just think of Thane talking about how he had proven to himself that he could move on if Sienna died, because he mourns her after
Endor.
The Death Star. Yeah, after Endor. And it proves to himself that, like, he would be okay without her, but when he sees that he can save her, he's like, I can't let her die. Like, I can't just let this happen, even if she thinks it's what she wants. And there's so much meaning there that I think Claudia Gray, like, once again, she's really challenging you to, like, think about this. Like, that's so heavy to, like, would you let Sienna die because she thinks this is what she wanted? Or would you, you know, save her and then walk with her through that grief period of trying to put her life back together? That's why Claudia is a queen. That's why it's so good. I think that we're going to see parallels to...
I'm having emotions.
Yeah, I think we're gonna see this in episode 9. I really, truly do.
So when you were talking about Sienna going down with her ship, all I was thinking about is Ben sacrificing himself to defeat Palpatine and being like, let me do this. And me, like, being a puddle in the movie theater.
Well, because here's the thing. Ben Solo, if he is redeemed, which I do believe that he will, he's probably going to be thinking a lot of the same things. You know, he's a war criminal. He's done horrible things. The only way for that to be reconciled into is for the eyes of other people is if he goes down taking down the First Order. And so, of course, he is going to beg Rey to let him do this. He's going to beg for Rey to kill him. And I do not think that she's going to do that because that's not...
there's nothing satisfying.
It's not satisfying. It's not an end. Like, that's what happened with Darth Vader, and you don't get to see them come back from that. And it's that coming back from it and learning that you can live on and that you can keep moving forward. That's, like, what we really need to see. And so I do think this ending with Sienna, I really do think that that's where we're going in episode 9. And will I be okay? No. But I want it.
JJ, break my heart and then put it back together.
Please.
That's so I completely agree. I see the parallels happening. And so that's one of the things I appreciate is that there are endings, like ending of redemption arcs where characters die, but there's also ending of redemption arcs where characters don't have to die. And I don't think you have to die to be fully redeemed. And no offense to the different stories I've read where that happens, because some of them have been like my favorite stories in the world and so phenomenal. But sometimes I've read stories where I feel like, oh, that's a little lazy. They could have lived. And so I appreciate that. And I'm hoping I see it because I've seen speculation, I've seen rumors, and I just really don't want Ben Solo to die. And I think this yeah. book is like the perfect example of, hey, yeah. he doesn't have to.
We got you, fam. It's harder. You're right. Like, it's the lazy way to just kill the character off, because then you don't have to go on that emotional journey of putting your life back together and, you know, reconciling with your darkness. But as we've seen in Dooku Jedi Lost, you know, to be balanced, you have to walk towards the light but acknowledge your darkness. Yes. And killing off a character, you're missing the acknowledging your darkness mm-hmm. part. It's so good.
And so many of us relate so much to Kylo in that, like, we want to believe that we can do things and come back from them. And with Vader, originally at least, we didn't really have that backstory. He wasn't as relatable as Kylo was. So now, what does that mean if Kylo dies? Like, mm-hmm. that none of us can be redeemed if we've ever done anything wrong.
Or even look at Sienna, it's like, can she be, she was such a good person, she just chose the wrong side. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's like, she can come back from that. At least that's what we hope and we strive for, right?
Yeah.
Right.
There is one other character that we haven't really talked about a lot, but he comes back at the end of the book, and that is Nash Windrider. So I just want to take like a minute and talk about him, because he, you know, he grew up on Alderaan. It was his home planet. He watches it be destroyed. He is a member of the Empire. He's very, very loyal. And we kind of see him lose his mind.
Yeah, he's kind of like evil man mustache twirling at the end.
Yeah. Well, and that's triggered when he sees that Thane is alive yeah. and is with the Rebellion. And I'm interested to know, like, why that happened. Like, what exactly snapped in him? And I think it's that, you know, he couldn't mourn for his home planet. Like, that's something that he couldn't do because he was with the Empire. And so he shoved all of that down. And he had to do that by telling himself that, you know, the rebels are terrorists and that it needed to be destroyed to stop the rebellion. And then the rebellion blew up the Death Star and like all the same stuff that Sienna was saying. And then to find out that like his best friend joined those rebels, like it breaks him. Mm-hmm. And suddenly he's murderous and he has to take him down and he has to see him die. And I think even Sienna says that like, It's fanaticism, yeah. the way that Nash starts to talk about the Empire. Like, he's completely, like, fanatic about it. And by the end, he is completely broken. Like, he sounds insane.
He's rewarding Sienna that, award, like that really prestigious award for her duty in the Empire. And at that point, he thinks she's dead. So it's like, he's like, she deserves this, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. She like, so at the end of this, he doesn't die in this book and he is still with the Empire. So what do we think happens to him?
I know, I messaged Alex.
Yeah, and
I
was like, a theory.
I was like, what if Nash Windrider is Allegiant General Pride or Admiral Pride or whatever his name is? And my theory is because Pride is a made-up evil name. But he goes off into the unknown regions with the remnants of the Empire. Like, that's where the First Order rises. And so
he'd be the right Nash age, right?
He's the right age. Yeah, all of these characters are Luke and Leia's age.
Yeah.
It's totally possible. And, like, if, like, what happens to Nash? What happened to, I mean, what happens to Rey Sloane? We don't know. Like, there's so many questions about what happened out here to the First Order. And, unfortunately, that is why we do not have Lost Stars 2. It's not because of stuff happening with Cyan and Thane, although it could be. But it's because she can't write Nash if we don't know the secrets of the First Order.
Mm-hmm.
And until we are allowed to explore how the First Order rose, like specifically what happened, which I think that will be fine after episode 9, because we're going to learn about Palpatine, because apparently Palpatine has always been here. Then hopefully we'll get to see what happens next, because the way that this ends, like, Nash's story is not over. Sienna's story is not over. There is so much more to be told here.
Well, like, and I didn't even think about, like, him being a part of the First Order or anything until I reread this book. And, like to me, endings are important. So the fact that, like, his last words and the last words in this book at all is, you will be avenged when the Empire rises again. And now we have, like, Palpatine back. I'm just like, it's all connected.
It's all connected.
It's all connected.
Put on your tinfoil hats. Welcome. It is, though. Like, it makes me think of, so Alex had put this in the notes. That was my headphones that just flew up. Alex had put this in the notes higher up. Seeing, you know, the Death Star blow up is kind of like Resistance. Spoilers if you haven't seen season one of Resistance. When Kaz sees Hosnian Prime blow up, because that was his home planet. And so you could almost look at it as, like, Nash sees his home planet be destroyed and the way that he has to internalize that. And Kaz is with friends. He is with people who will understand what he's going through. But if he turns into, like, an anger boy, like, you know, there's a lot of parallels that could possibly be had here. And it's so easy to fall into that darkness. Like, it's so much easier to fall into that darkness. It's so hard to walk towards the light when something traumatic like that happens to you. So I know I for sure am definitely looking forward to that when Resistance comes back around.
I miss Kaz a lot.
Yeah, he's such a good boy. Okay, so that is Lost Stars, the gist of it anyway. There's so much more there, but we're going to talk some about the themes that we have here. And our first one is family and found family. So where do we see this theme throughout this book?
So I see it with Cyana and her parents. They're really, really close. And then also, we haven't even talked about Cyana's twin, her connection to her, and that, like, family relation. I also see it with amongst that, like, class of Imperials, like Nash, Ved, like, all of them all together, going to school together, and with Thane and Wilgera and that whole crew. And then Thane within the Resistance, too.
One of the distinctions and the coolest things I see about family, so obviously you have Thane, who doesn't really get along with his family and things, and he meets all these people at the academy and all these recruits, and they become best friends. And then you have Cyana, who does love her family, and they do get along, but you have the moment when they do go to the ball, and she's just, I think she's just going to wear, like, her regular military uniform, and it's, I think it's Jude who at one point is like, well, my culture has a custom too, and I want to be able to get you this dress and things like that. And so I really like the the contrast of being able to find another family and people to accept you and help bring you out of the shell, like whether or not you are close with your blood family or not. And I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you really see it with Thane and Sienna, especially because Thane is not close with his family. Like, Sienna is his family. Like, when he thinks about, like, he never wants to go back to Jellokin again. Like, he'd be happy if he never sees the rest his family ever again. But, like, he loves Sienna and he wants to be with Sienna, and they are so, so close. And that bond is so important. And towards the end of this book, it is almost described as a force bond, because the force keeps bringing them back together. And one of my favorite, well, I put it under love, but I want to talk about it here.
Just go to love.
Well, this flows into love. So one of my favorite lines from this book is the last line from Thane and Sienna. So, like, the last part of this book is Nash, kind of seeing what's happening with him. So, like, the final part of, like, the story for Thane and Sienna, it says that they mirrored each other, almost touching, but forever apart. And I just, feel that line. And I'm like, oh, really? Interesting. So hands are a language, sky talkers. We have a force bond. The force keeps bringing them back together. They, you know, like, reconcile their loneliness. They find family in each other. They love each other more than anything. Like, both of them, Thane loves Sienna more than the Rebellion, and Sienna loves Thane more than the Empire. Like, it's unbelievable to see their connection.
I think the line, one of the lines that gets me the most, is when they're arguing and she's like, I never wanted to be the one to kill you. And he was like, well, I would have wanted it to be you. And he's like, we're bound always, you and I, in life or death. And I was just like,
oh. Alex sent me that line earlier.
I was like, I don't know what to do with my feelings here.
It's like, my emotions are just, like, I can't handle myself. Oh. I think, like, whenever I read this book, so normally I listen to it. This was actually the first time I actually just sat down and read it. And what I love about books is when I get to spend time with it, and every time I go to pick it up, it feels like I'm returning to, like, a place that I love, or I'm returning to friends, or, like, something like that. And some people, I know, like, with certain books like that, they think that the pacing is slow. I would say, like, A Court of Mist and Fury is another book where I really feel like that. And that's something that I really love in this book, because you spend so much time with Thane and Sienna, and you see their relationship grow, and you see how much they love each other, and, like, you get connected too. Like, you feel that attachment too. Like, everything that they're feeling, you feel it too. And that's something that amazes me about books, that they have the power to do that and to just suck you in like that, and, like, you feel all this love and you feel all of their heartache, and it's so beautiful. I want Alex to talk about what we were talking about the other day, and what? That is unconditional love being a theme of Star Wars.
How did we even come across this? We're like, specifically unconditional love.
I don't know, because all of a sudden you were like, you need to add Katy Perry's Unconditionally to the playlist. It's very, very low.
Wait, where did it come from? I don't know. Anyway, so something the other day, and now we've been talking about it every day, about how unconditional love has been such a constant theme in Star Wars, and it's been in every single movie. There's unconditional love between two people in every single movie. And in this novel, we see it with Thane and Sienna, and we see it with Sienna and her mother, too, like, when that trial happens. And, like, I mean, especially with Thane and Sienna, you see it because they sacrifice for each other. And that's, like, that's ultimately what unconditional love is about, is that you would, no matter what, you would do anything for the person.
It allows you to come back from your darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when we were talking about it, I was like, that is the key to redemption, to know that somebody loves you no matter, like, they have seen you, they have seen your flaws, they have seen your sins, and they say, I forgive you and I love you anyway. That allows you to come back from all of that. And so that's why I believe that Sayana is going to be okay, because she has Thane. That's why I believe that Ben Solo is going to be okay, because he has Rey. And it's a really interesting theme, and I think it challenges a lot of, like, you know, to love somebody unconditionally. It sounds easy, but it can be really, really difficult, because, like, you have to look at somebody and you have to be like, you know, I see all of these things that you've done, but I still love you, and you are still not alone. Like, that's really, really powerful.
I think the other part of that goes into the whole point of view thing. So we get different point of views of the events of the original trilogy, and different things happen in this book. And in The Last Jedi, we get different point of views of what happened to Ben. And I just think part of that unconditional love is something happened and I feel one way, maybe you feel another, but I'm going to take this, like, moment to sit and talk with you and say, like, where are you coming from? At least, like, there's some level of understanding that's coming, so that even if at the end there's, like, some kind of split where it's like, I talk to you, I don't exactly see where you're coming from, but, like, I'm still here for you. It's just, like, that simple act of the sitting down, talking, understanding.
100%. Yep. So our last theme that we're going to talk about is loyalty and duty. And we've been kind of sprinkling this throughout the whole book. I think we mostly see loyalty in Sayana, and just how she will not leave the Empire. She, no matter what, she stays with it. And she talks about how, like, that's the whole thing about promises. Like, that's why they mean something, because Thane says, like, why would you keep your promise to something when it's not worth it? And she's like, well, that's, you know, where the faith comes in. That's why promises are so hard, because you have to stay with it, even if it doesn't turn out the way that you think it's going to. Like, that's where that trust comes in. And I had never really thought about it that way, because, I mean, I think I had kind of always thought of it like Thane, where it's like, oh, this thing betrayed me, I don't believe in it anymore. Whereas Sayana is like, well, you put your trust in it. You made a promise. You made an oath. You have to uphold that no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Because if you're not loyal, then you're just as bad as them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because she wants to be better than they can be.
I'm gonna bring in another thing real fast, because it reminds me of one of my favorite characters in the world, Jon Snow.
Yes.
And that reminds me of, like, when Cersei's like, I'm sorry if you've never seen Game of Thrones before, I'm gonna give spoilers. But it's like when Cersei's like, okay, I'll go help you fight the dead, but only if, like, the King of the North, like, stays out of the whole thing between her and Daenerys, and, like, stays out of it. And obviously he's already, like, bent the knee to Daenerys. And so he tells Cersei that, and everyone gets mad at him. And he says, when enough people make false promises, words stop meaning anything. Then there are no more answers, only better and better lies. And that's what that reminds me of, like, in this instance. It's like, if your word doesn't mean anything, it's like, what do you have?
I mean, 100%. And, like, that's something that Sayana preaches, like, throughout this entire book. She's just like, you know, if you can't keep your promises, then it doesn't mean anything at all. And she sees that in the Empire. She sees that the Empire doesn't really care about anything. It only cares about itself. It is literally a machine. There is nothing, there is no humanity in it. But she realizes, you know, there is good and bad on both sides here. There is still good people in the Empire. And we meet those good people. Like, yes, Nash goes off the deep end. But before that, you know, like, we had Nash. We have Sayana. We had Jude. We even had Ved to a certain degree, even though Ved's a little bit, you know, out there. But, like, we see these good people in the Empire. And, like, Sayana's just like, you know, isn't it worth it to keep these good people in the Empire so that there are good people in the Empire? Because, like, if they all leave, then the Empire is just 100% evil. And that's an argument that I definitely think you see come up a lot, just in other media and in other, like, huge topics in general. It's like, do you leave or do you stay to hope that you can make a difference and hopefully bring some, like, goodness into it? The other thing I want to say about the love and duty thing is when Thane is talking to Mon Mothma, and actually he was really, really drunk, and he gives Mon Mothma his entire life story. I love it so much. But She tells him, it's all right if you still love someone on the other side of this war, as long as you love what you're fighting for even more. And I think for Sayana, that's how she feels until, like, she sees the second... Well, actually, until, like, her mother is put on trial, I think that's kind of how she sees it. And Thane, in that moment, is like, well, I love Sayana more than the Rebellion. But by the end of it, he really does believe in the Rebellion, and he really does believe that, like, something good can come out of it. And he ultimately still, you know, saves Sayana, but I think he finally finds that loyalty that he had been missing to his cause.
That now that you phrase it that way, that actually really reminds me of Finn a lot. Because I feel like he's stuck with the Resistance a lot because of Rey, and like this like tether and anchor that Rey's been when he abandoned the First Order. And I feel like in Tross, it's this coming like into his own of like, okay, now mm-hmm. I'm here with the Resistance, like as myself. Like I still love Rey, I still care for Rey, but I want to be here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you can 100% make that argument. Like, you can 100% say that Finn is Thane in this one. Because he leaves the Empire because they killed a whole bunch of villagers. Or, not the Empire. He leaves the First Order because they, you know, they killed a whole bunch of villagers. They are murdering people. He doesn't want to be in it anymore. This isn't for him. So he just leaves. But he doesn't want to fight. He wants to keep running. He wants to keep going. And Rose helps him see that. Like, Rose helps him see that, like, you know, you can't just keep running. At some point, you kind of do have to pick a side. And by the end of The Last Jedi, he still hasn't really learned that, you know, it's not about fighting what you hate, it's about saving what you love. But I do think by the time we see him in The Rise of Skywalker, he will be. Yeah, he'll be there as himself fighting for this cause that he truly, truly believes in.
Yeah, I think we'll see that with the coming books in the fall.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm very excited about the books that are coming out in the lead up to episode 9. I think it's going to be really, really interesting. So we're going to move into our next section. So we have an audience question, and we asked you guys, what do you think happens at the end of the book? Like, anything can happen. What do you want mm-hmm. to happen? And we got a couple of responses on that.
So Brittany said, that's tough to say. While I think that they would eventually get their happy ending, I don't see that happening until far into the future. I imagine Sayana would be in prison for her crimes for quite possibly years. My headcanon is that Thane and Sayana stay in touch through letters and occasional visits while she's in prison. When she's released, they eventually reunite and slowly build their relationship again. Similar to the time spent in Lost Stars, I see the relationship growing and evolving over a number of years before they ever fully commit. So pain.
Yeah,
pain. It's realistic, though.
Yeah, there's well, there's a lot of fan fiction, but I'm thinking of one in particular that I can't think of the name of, where it's like, it's just like little moments between like Rey
Catch
and
me
Ben.
I'm falling.
No. Catch Me I'm Falling is up there.
Drink if you hear us say Catch Me I'm Falling on an episode. Yeah.
It might be Build a Ladder, actually. Oh. Build a Ladder to the Stars.
Yeah.
Where they kind
is
of...
That's the one that it's they like haven't updated?
No. That's the 50,000 word one shot.
Oh, that one's good.
That one's so good. Yeah, it's like a collection of moments between Rey and Ben. And that would be really interesting to get between Sayana and Thane. Just like little moments here and there, which, I mean, Lost Stars is kind of that anyway, but mm-hmm. that would be really interesting just to kind of see what happens to him.
So Danny from Rebel Order podcast said, all I can say is I hope they had a happy ending. Part of me felt that they had to live the rest of their lives like that, stolen moments, and they didn't really get their traditional happily ever after. Aww.
They can't be forever apart forever. I will die if I ever.
Ashley Marie Paul said, I like to think that eventually Sayana and Thane do get a happy ending, and they can help each other through their pain and grief. It's all eventually. Everyone kind of is like, eventually. Okay, so Sun Drong said, Hopefully they not only get together, but also get to interact with Kaz and Tam and maybe help the two understand each other. Oh, and maybe Sayana could help Tam to start realizing the error of her ways. And maybe Sayana could join the resistance to atone for supporting the Empire.
Yeah, and I think that's really interesting because, like we said, like, Sayana and Thane are, like, Luke and Leia's age. They were born on Empire Day or somewhere around that, just like Ezra. And so part of me thinks that, like, if they're going to be with the Resistance, they would already be with the Resistance. But I would love a conversation between Sayana and Tam because I think Tam is in a very similar situation that Sayana is in. Also, spoilers for Resistance. Well, we won't get there. I was going to say extra spoilers because Alex and I have seen the first episode. But, I mean, I think that would be really, really cool to see them interact with the Resistance characters and kind of see them, like, impart some of that knowledge. But we don't know where they are in this timeline because we don't know what's happened yet. But I would like it. It'd be cool. Our final section of the show is our Little Bebos. And Alex, what are Little Bebos for those of us joining us for the first time?
It's something that you enjoyed about whatever we're talking about. So usually we choose something really small or like we really zero in on one thing. Mm-hmm. Like Shannon did 2 episodes ago.
We will forever talk about the pelvic flaps, won't we? All right. But Gina, since you are our guest, what is your Little Bebo? You go first.
Mine would be, and granted, I don't know how small it is. I feel like it's an important part, but not like a main part. But the fact that Sayana has a twin, and the fact that it's important, the whole look through my eyes thing, and always showing the beautiful and the tragic to her. One of the things that attracted me to this book is the fact that I have a twin. And so I was just like, this is, granted, my twin's alive still, thank goodness, but
not quite the same.
It's not quite the same. but just things like that is like what always gets me when like twins are like normalized and it's not like this weird thing about them. So that was one of the things I loved.
That's awesome. What about yours, Alex?
Mine is Logera. I think she's the best mama and Thane deserves such a good mama, so they're so cute together.
I like that she's like a white Wookiee because she's like that. She's so old that she's
and
like
she's
turned
so
gray.
Caring and understanding.
She just wants Thane to have a shiny coat.
I know.
My Little Bebo is the Fortress, which is it's like the safe place that Sayana and Thane create on their home world in this little cave, and it's the only place that they can go when they're still living on their home planet where they can, like, truly be together and truly be friends, just because a friendship between first and second waivers is so unheard of, and their family doesn't really approve of it or anything. And I just really like that. I like the idea of having this safe place where you can go and, like, truly be yourself, and, like, they decorate it, and there's a little mobile in there. I also like that we return there later when they're older. It's just interesting. It's very meaningful. And I like that Claudia Gray included that in there, that they have this childhood place and that they return to it at another point in their life.
It's like all theirs. It's like the perfect mix of like the first and second waiver too, and it's just like it just belongs to them.
Mm-hmm. It's where worlds collide. It's like a world between worlds.
Wait, I was going to say, there is a place. I'll meet you there.
Oh, God. Well, and let's bring it full circle here now, shall we? There's a scene where they're there at the golden hour because it's sunset. That is the place. So... Lipstick and lightsabers drinking game. It's happening.
It's golden hour. Unconditional love. Catch Me, I'm Falling by Violet. That's like our favorite fan fiction.
Yeah, it's going to happen. If you haven't read Catch Me, I'm Falling by Violet Horror 666, like, you need to read it. It's great.
It's a two-shot. It's not
It's not. It's not a commitment. But I think that is going to wrap us up for our episode on Lost Stars. Like I said at the beginning of this episode, if you haven't read Lost Stars, highly, highly recommend that you do. And if you have read Lost Stars, we would love to know your thoughts on it. I encourage everybody to just read it over and over and over again. If you've never listened to the audiobook, I actually really recommend it because I think the narrator does a really good job.
It's really good.
Yeah, because like even though it's told from like so many different perspectives, it's just one guy who does it. And he does a really good job. And, like, it's always fun to listen to Star Wars audiobooks because there's sound effects and there's music and there's a lot of Across the Stars.
Yeah.
So it's really, really great. But, Gina, where can our listeners find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Regina Lynette, L-Y-N-N-E-T-T-E. And then you can also hear me on Unmistakably Star Wars, and their Twitter is Unmistakably SW.
Yeah, and you can also hear Regina's Star Wars story. We had her featured on episode 15, I believe.
Yeah.
And if you haven't listened to that yet, I highly recommend that you do because Alex and I both cried while we listened to it. It was beautiful and we love it. So thank you so much for sending in your Star Wars story. And if any of you guys out there want to send in your Star Wars story, we really, really want to hear from you. We really encourage you to share that. If you want to, if you don't want to, that's totally okay. But you can always email us at lipsticklightsabers1901@gmail.com. You can reach out to us at lip_lightsabers on Twitter. Alex and I are always on Twitter. We are always galaxy braining and crying about everything. So come and find us. She is at Alex Leonis. I am at Carter Shannon. But that will do it for this episode. So we will see you guys in the next one. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.